Before it was feathers and glitter, it was fire. Before it was freedom, it was forbidden. Carnival is more than celebration. It's rebellion dressed in rhythm. From the sugar plantations of Trinidad to the sound of steel pan under moonlight, discover the untold story of how enslaved Africans rewrote a European festival into a Caribbean cry for freedom. This is the history they tried to silence, but it lives in the masquerade, lives in the music. This is Carnival, the dance of resistance. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Before the glitter and the costumes, before the steel pan rhythms and the road marches, Carnival was a battlefield. A cultural war zone of resistance, survival, and transformation. Its story begins not in the Caribbean but in Europe, where Catholic societies celebrated Carnival, derived from the Latin carn vale, or farewell to meat, before the fasting period of Lent. These pre-Lenten festivals, marked by indulgence, costumes, and chaos, allowed for temporary social inversions. Servants mocked masters. Gender roles were blurred. It was liberation through spectacle. When colonial powers brought Carnival to the Caribbean, it was reimagined on stolen land. French and Spanish enslavers hosted masked balls for themselves, exclusive, opulent, and detached from the brutal world outside. Enslaved Africans were forbidden from participating. But where access was denied, resistance was born. From the sugarcane fields of Trinidad to the plantations of Martinique, enslaved people created their own carnivals. Rooted in African ritual and masquerade, these early expressions, like kembele, were more than performance. They were coded rebellion. Slaves used drums, dance, and fire to enact uprisings in disguise. They mocked their oppressors with grotesque masks. They turned the master's weapon, spectacle, against him. After emancipation in 1834, newly freed Afro-Caribbean communities flooded the streets in defiant masquerade. Colonial authorities tried to suppress the explosion. Drumming was banned. Public gatherings were restricted. But Carnival adapted. Bamboo sticks replaced drums. Costumes became walking sculptures. Calypso music gave voice to the voiceless, with lyrics mocking politicians, police, and colonial systems. And later, steel pan would rise, born from oil drums, echoing resilience. Carnival evolved. It became a ritual of transformation, a cinematic expression of Black heritage, cultural resistance, and collective identity. What was once a Catholic indulgence became an Afro-Caribbean revolution. Today, Trinidad's Carnival is the gold standard, a global beacon of cultural storytelling. But across the Caribbean, echoes remain. In St. Lucia Jounin Creole, in Jamaica's Bacchanal, in Barbados' Cropover, Carnival continues as a narrative of struggle, liberation, and pride. Carnival is not just celebration. It is survival set to rhythm. A living archive of pain, joy, and unstoppable cultural resilience. Carnival was no longer just a celebration. By the late 19th century, it had become a frontline. In the decades following emancipation, Trinidad's streets pulsed with new life. The formerly enslaved, many still living in poverty, used Carnival as their loudest voice, their boldest symbol of cultural resistance. But for the colonial authorities and the white elites, this explosion of Afro-Caribbean expression was a threat to order. The flashpoint was kembele, short for cane brûlées, French for burnt cane. It was a commemorative street ritual performed during Carnival that dramatized the days when enslaved people were forced to harvest burning sugarcane during plantation fires. But in post-emancipation Trinidad, kembele was transformed. It became a sacred act of defiance. Carrying torches through the night, performers would dance, chant, and reenact scenes of resistance. African drums beat with ancestral force. Masqueraders wore devil masks, colonial uniforms, or grotesque imitations of plantation masters. Each costume told a story of survival, of trauma, of spiritual rebellion. By 1881, the British colonial government had had enough. They feared the drums. They feared the torches. But above all, they feared the unity. The kembele celebrations were drawing thousands, working-class Black people, Indo-Trinidadians, freed descendants of enslaved Africans, all joining in symbolic revolt. The colonial state viewed it as a rebellion dressed in feathers. That year, Police Commissioner Captain Arthur Baker ordered the banning of drumming and torch processions. He wanted carnival tamed, sanitized, silenced. But Trinidad refused. On the night of February 28, 1881, carnival revelers assembled downtown in Port of Spain for Cambalay. Armed only with bamboo sticks, flambeaux, torches, and steel nerves, they marched forward. When British police attempted to shut it down, a riot exploded. Crowds clashed with officers. Bamboo sticks turned to weapons. Rocks flew. Women and men stood side by side, defending their right to dance, to drum, to tell their history. It was not a random street fight. It was the people's uprising against colonial erasure. By dawn, the police had retreated. Port of Spain bore the scars of conflict. But carnival had spoken. It would not be tamed. The 1881 Cambalay riots became a turning point in Caribbean cultural resistance. Though the colonial government would continue to suppress elements of carnival, outlawing African drums and restricting gatherings, the community adapted. They created tambu bamboo bands, using hollowed bamboo tubes as percussion instruments to replace band drums. Out of this innovation, years later, came the birth of the steel pan, the world's only new acoustic instrument invented in the 20th century, and a global symbol of Trinidad's resilience. The Cambalay riots were not just about music. They were about memory. About reclaiming identity in a society built to erase it. They marked a moment when culture itself went to war, and won. In every carnival parade today, in every rhythm of the steel pan and step of the masquerader, echoes of that resistance remain. Carnival was never just a party. It was protest in rhythm. A burning procession of memory. And the Cambalay riots made sure the fire would never go out. Outlaw the drum, and the people will make music from fire. After the Cambalay riots of 1881, British colonial authorities doubled down on cultural suppression. In Trinidad and across the Caribbean, the African drum was not just seen as noise, it was seen as a weapon. Its rhythms could summon memory, unity, rebellion. So it was banned. But culture is never silent for long. In the wake of repression, Trinidadian communities responded with radical innovation. With bamboo stalks in hand, they created tambu bamboo bands, percussive orchestras made from striking bamboo tubes on the ground and against each other. Loud, syncopated, and street-borne, these bands became the pulse of carnival's underground resistance. But by the 1930s, bamboo gave way to metal. Discarded oil drums, brought to the island by U.S. military bases during World War II, littered the urban landscape. For many, they were just garbage. But for Trinidad's youth, especially in working-class Laventille and Port of Spain, they became instruments. Early pan men, many of them former tambu bamboo players, began experimenting. They hammered the surfaces of oil drums into dents and dimples, tuning them by ear. These dents produced different notes, like keys on a piano. What began as rudimentary ping-pong pans soon evolved into full melodic ranges. The steel pan was born. At first, society rejected it. Steel pan music was associated with gangs, violence, and rebellion. Police often harassed players, and middle-class elites dismissed the instrument as vulgar noise. Yet it continued to grow, on rooftops, in alleys, in secret yards, refining itself through experimentation, competition, and deep cultural pride. Steel pan wasn't just an instrument, it was a resistance machine. By the 1950s, organized steel bands like Desperados, Renegades, and Casablanca were competing in Panorama, the national carnival competition. Steel orchestras filled the streets, performing complex arrangements of calypso, classical, and jazz-inspired music. Players wore military-style uniforms, mimicking and mocking colonial pageantry. For many, Panorama became the Super Bowl of Caribbean music, where communities battled not with violence but with harmony. International attention soon followed. Steel pan music traveled from the backstreets of Trinidad to Carnegie Hall, the United Nations, and the global stage. The world saw not just a new instrument, but a cultural revolution forged in oil drums. Steel pan was the embodiment of Caribbean identity. From colonization's wreckage, it created melody. From discarded weapons of industry, it sang freedom. It was Afro-Caribbean innovation at its highest form, born of necessity, shaped by resistance and elevated by genius. Today, steel pan music is heard not only in Trinidad, but across the Caribbean diaspora, in Notting Hill, Brooklyn, Toronto, and beyond. It remains the heartbeat of carnival, the voice of joy, the echo of protest. And though it was once silenced by law, it now roars louder than ever. Because when the drum is banned, the people will make music out of steel. And when a culture refuses to die, every note becomes a revolution. Before there was a beat, there was a word. And in carnival's long journey from repression to celebration, no weapon cut deeper than calypso. Rooted in the oral traditions of West Africa, calypso evolved as the griot's gift, a lyrical form of storytelling, satire, protest, and celebration. In the 19th and early 20th centuries, enslaved and later emancipated Afro-Caribbean people, especially in Trinidad, used calypso to chronicle the truth their colonial rulers tried to erase. Calypso singers, called calypsonians, were cultural prophets. Masters of double entendre, irony, and coded language, they sang of injustice, corruption, sexuality, and resistance. Their lyrics weren't just entertainment, they were journalism set to melody. In a time when newspapers were controlled by colonial elites, calypso became the people's press. Early legends like Attila the Hun, Lord Pretender, and Roaring Lion challenged the colonial order with wit and wordplay. In the 1930s and 40s, Growling Tiger sang about workers' rights. Lord Invader took rum and Coca-Cola all the way to the U.S. courts after the Andrews sisters profited from his melody. And Mighty Sparrow, the Calypso King, used his voice to both seduce and incite, taking on politicians, morality, and culture in one verse. But as times changed, so too did the rhythm. By the 1970s, a faster, more danceable offspring of calypso emerged, soca, short for Soul of Calypso. Created by Lord Shorty, soca fused the melodic storytelling of calypso with Indian rhythms, American funk, and Afrobeat energy. It reflected the multicultural fusion of modern Trinidad, where African and East Indian heritage blended into a singular Caribbean sound. Soca wasn't about protest, it was about power. Power in joy. Power in the body. Power in the road. Where calypso spoke to the mind, soca spoke to the hips. It exploded onto the carnival scene with road march competitions pushing hits like Hot 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 by Arrow and Who Let the Dogs Out? By Baha Men into global pop culture. Yet the lyrical art form never died. Even as soca rose, calypso retained its prestige. Competitions like the Calypso Monarch remained the intellectual arena of carnival, where calypsonians dissected government failures, social injustice, and cultural hypocrisy with surgical precision, backed by brass bands and centuries of oral resistance. Together, calypso and soca became carnival's dual heart. One whispered secrets, the other shouted joy. One called out injustice, the other called the people to dance. Both, however, preserved the soul of the Caribbean, its ability to resist through rhythm and to rise through storytelling in music. In today's carnival, the legacy lives on. Artists like Moshel Montano, Fayan Lions, and Kes the Band continue the soca evolution, while calypsonians carry the torch of lyrical resistance. Carnival may dazzle with costumes, but it is the song that holds the truth. Because when systems fall and empires fade, it is the rhythm and the word that remain. And in every chorus, the Caribbean remembers. Carnival was never a single story. It was a spark, ignited in Trinidad, carried by wind and diaspora, and reborn across the Caribbean in vibrant local forms. What began as a festival of resistance in one island became a region-wide movement of cultural expression. From the steel pan streets of Port of Spain to the calypso trucks of Bridgetown, each nation took the essence of carnival and infused it with its own identity, its own fight, and its own soul. Trinidad and Tobago, the blueprint. Trinidad remains the heartbeat of carnival. It is the birthplace of cambalé, calypso, soca, and steel pan. It is here that Juve begins, before sunrise, with revelers covered in mud, oil, and paint, symbolizing both spiritual cleansing and the raw energy of rebellion. 2 days of mass follow, filled with towering costumes, political satire, and music competitions like Panorama and Calypso Monarch. Carnival in Trinidad is not just a party. It is the cultural compass of the region. Barbados, crop over and the spirit of harvest. In Barbados, Carnival is known as crop over, a celebration with roots in the 18th century sugarcane harvest festival. After slavery was abolished, freed Afro-Barbadians revived the tradition to honor survival and hard labor. By the 1970s, crop over evolved into a full-scale national event. It features Kohablapot, a massive music show, Grand Kadumint, the main masquerade parade, and infectious bashment soca music. Here, Carnival is a tribute to the land, labor, and liberation. St. Lucia, Jounan Kweol and cultural identity. St. Lucia's Carnival, originally held before Lent, was moved to July to avoid clashing with Trinidad. But its roots run deep in both French colonial customs and African resistance. Unique to St. Lucia is the celebration of Jounan Kweol, Creole Day, which emphasizes the island's Kweol, Creole, language, music, and heritage. Traditional masqueraders like the Neg Gwo Gro, mocking colonial excess, still parade, reminding all that carnival here is both memory and performance. Jamaica, Bacchanal and Dancehall Infusion. Jamaica's carnival, Bacchanal Jamaica, is younger than others, having emerged in the 1990s. Yet it is powerful in its fusion of dancehall, reggae music, and soca. Though not born from the same post-emancipation rituals as Trinidad, Jamaican Carnival is an explosive statement of island pride, Afro-Caribbean unity, and evolving cultural fusion. Road marches in Kingston blend rhythms, DJ culture, and pan-Caribbean sounds, proving that Carnival adapts, evolves, and reflects the present. Smaller islands, mighty voices. Across the Eastern Caribbean, from Grenada's Spice Moss to Anguilla's Summer Festival, from Dominica's Real Moss to Martinique's Carnival Martiniquoise, Carnival lives in forms both fierce and intimate. Grenada is famous for its jab-jab masqueraders, revelers in horned helmets and motor oil, representing enslaved spirits returning in defiance. Martinique brings satire and French Creole heritage to the fore, with Vavel, a giant effigy burned to mark the end of Carnival. Each island carries its own vocabulary, costumes, sounds, and sacred meanings. But they all share the same heartbeat. Carnival as survival. Carnival as resistance. Carnival as joy in the face of history. The diaspora carries the flame. As Caribbean people migrated, especially to the UK, Canada, and the US, they brought Carnival with them. In London's Notting Hill Carnival, New York's Labor Day Parade, and Toronto's Carabana, the tradition continues. Steel bands echo through city streets. Masqueraders wear both feathers and flags. Soca artists headline international stages. And across continents, Caribbean identity is celebrated in sound, color, and motion. Carnival has become a diasporic revolution, connecting generations through shared memory and modern rhythm. Carnival was more than feathers and music. To colonial rulers, it was fire in the streets. As Carnival evolved from enslaved resistance to national celebration, European powers across the Caribbean recognized its deeper danger. This wasn't merely revelry, it was the assertion of Black identity, cultural autonomy, and political voice in territories they still controlled. And so began a calculated campaign: criminalize the culture to contain the people. In Trinidad, the 19th century saw the British colonial government enacting a series of ordinances designed to dismantle Carnival's core rituals. African drums, long seen as spiritual tools and instruments of rebellion, were banned outright. Stick fighting and torchlight processions were labeled threats to public order. Masqueraders were accused of promoting violence, drunkenness, and moral decay. But this was never about safety. It was about silence. By targeting Carnival, the colonial authorities were attempting to strip Afro-Caribbean people of their collective memory and means of cultural expression. Each law passed was a blow against storytelling, spiritual performance, and resistance born in rhythm. In Jamaica, similar measures unfolded. Under British rule, public gatherings were restricted. Jonkanu, Jamaica's own pre-emancipation masquerade with African roots, was ridiculed, pushed to the margins, and at times suppressed. Its vibrancy, its grotesque masks, its mimicry of the colonial elite, these made the powerful uneasy. They saw threat in satire, revolution in joy. Even in places like Barbados and St. Lucia, colonial elites tried to refocus public attention toward more refined European festivals, seeking to drown out Afro-Caribbean heritage in a sea of Victorian control. But resistance was never far behind. Every time a drum was outlawed, a new rhythm emerged. The tambu bamboo bands rose not just as musical innovations, but as defiant acts of cultural engineering. When police raided mosque camps, communities moved underground, forming tight networks of costume makers, songwriters, and steel band innovators. Calypsonians sharpened their pens into lyrical daggers, mocking colonial governors and corrupt systems with wit too clever to censor. Even in the legal realm, preservationists emerged. Activists, scholars, and cultural custodians fought to preserve carnival's legitimacy. In the mid-20th century, figures like Andrew Carr, Sylvia Winter, and Dr. Hollis, Chalk Dust Liverpool began documenting the roots and meanings of masquerade, calypso, and ritual. Their work was not just academic. It was revolutionary. By naming the history, they protected it from erasure. Over time, national governments, many of which were still shaped by colonial mentalities, had to reckon with the popularity of carnival. As independence movements gained momentum, carnival was rebranded, from rebellion to national identity. It was now something to be showcased, but only on the state's terms. This created tension between preservation and commercialization, between honoring the roots of resistance and turning carnival into a tourist spectacle. But the people never forgot. Behind every costume is a history. Behind every soca lyric is a struggle. Behind every steel pan note is a law once written to destroy it. Carnival survived because it was never just a performance. It was protest disguised as pleasure. It was memory made masquerade. And no law, no ordinance, no colonial decree could kill it. By the 21st century, carnival had outlived the empires that tried to suppress it. It had outlasted slavery, colonial laws, religious condemnation, and moral panic. What began as an act of survival had become the most powerful symbol of Caribbean identity, unity, and pride. But what exactly does carnival mean to a nation? Across the region, carnival is more than an event. It's a mirror of the Caribbean spirit, a living, moving archive of Afro-Caribbean resilience, storytelling, and transformation. Every road march, every costume, every chorus is a heartbeat in the rhythm of national self-definition. In post-independence nations like Trinidad and Jamaica, carnival became a tool of cultural statehood. It was reclaimed from its colonial roots and celebrated as an emblem of the people. Schools, ministries, and national festivals began embracing carnival not as disorder, but as heritage. And yet, carnival remained radical. Even as it was embraced by official institutions, it refused to be tamed. At the heart of carnival lies mas, short for masquerade. Mas is more than glitter and glamour. It is a wearable protest, a walking story, a reclaiming of public space. Costumes that once mocked colonizers now satirize corrupt politicians, oppressive systems, and societal inequality. During major elections, carnival becomes a theater of political commentary. All mas characters parade with signs, slogans, and props, unfiltered expressions of public frustration or joy. The streets become a stage for political storytelling in full color. But carnival also speaks to the soul of the Caribbean diaspora. In London, Toronto, New York, and Miami, where millions of Caribbean descendants live, carnival is a bridge to home. It is a moment when Grenadians, St. Lucians, Jamaicans, Bajans, and Trinidadians wave their flags, sing in their dialects, and reclaim identity in cities that often try to erase it. Carnival becomes the one time when a person from rural Clarendon, inner-city Laventille, or uptown Castries stands equal on the road with everyone else. No class. No border. No apology. For youth, it's a place of expression. For elders, it's remembrance. For immigrants, it's return. For the region, it's who we are. In today's Caribbean, debates continue. Has carnival become too commercial? Has it lost its political edge? Are foreign influences diluting its purpose? And yet each year carnival rises again, new songs, new bands, new mas. Because carnival evolves, but it never forgets. It reminds the Caribbean who it was, who it is, and who it can become. When you hear the rhythm, when you see the movement, when you feel the vibration of thousands dancing as one, you are witnessing the living body of Caribbean identity. Not in textbooks, not in speeches, but in the streets, in the spirit, in the sound. In the beginning, carnival was forbidden. Now it's sponsored. What was once outlawed for being too African, too dangerous, or too loud, is today backed by multinational brands, televised for international audiences, and turned into billion-dollar tourism campaigns. But as Carnival grows into a global spectacle, a haunting question remains. What happens when culture becomes commodity? Across the Caribbean, Carnival is increasingly caught between two forces: cultural preservation and commercial exploitation. On one side, there are the elders, pan builders, moss makers, and cultural historians, those who remember when Carnival meant rebellion, memory, and identity. On the other, corporations, tourism boards, and international party promoters see Carnival as a brand, something to sell, repackage, and export. The result? Glitter, feathers, and sponsorship banners dominate the front lines of many parades. Traditional moss, once full of meaning, satire, and symbolic protest, often struggles to compete with bikini-clad bands and dollar-driven music trucks. Costumes are shipped in bulk. Tickets are sold like VIP club passes. And the stories, rituals, and resistance that birthed Carnival are too often buried under fog machines and Instagram reels. In Trinidad, for instance, traditional moss characters, like the Pierrot Grenade, Midnight Robber, or Baby Doll, now appear mostly in cultural showcases, not on the main road. Their messages are powerful, but they don't sell out fates. The moss has become masked. In Jamaica, Carnival has exploded in popularity in just a few decades. But critics argue that it leans too heavily on imported soca culture, overshadowing local traditions like Jonkanu or Kumina. Even as Bacchanal grows, the roots are being questioned. And in the diaspora, London, Toronto, Miami, the same tension brews. Caribbean communities fight to maintain authenticity as outsiders flood in, often unaware of the history behind the feathers and music. Even more alarming is cultural appropriation. Around the world, non-Caribbean influencers don costumes, mispronounce terms like juve, and post photos stripped of meaning. They consume the spectacle but not the soul. So, how do we protect Carnival? The answer lies in education, storytelling, and cultural sovereignty. Artists, historians, and grassroots organizations are working to revive and teach the origins of moss. Documentaries, lectures, and books are amplifying voices like those of Chalk Dust, Peter Minshall, and Pearl Aintu Springer, cultural giants who remind us, Carnival is a language. Learn to speak it or leave it alone. Young moss designers are bringing tradition back, creating costumes that blend modern style with ancestral symbolism. Calypsonians continue to write truth into song. And in the face of commodification, small bands still gather with wire, glue, and fabric. Not for the money, but for the memory. Because Carnival is not for sale. It was bought in blood. It was stitched with survival. It was sung into being by people the world tried to erase. To protect its soul is not to resist growth, but to anchor it in truth. Carnival can be global, yes, but it must always be grounded. Not just a product, but a process. Not just a parade, but a protest. Not just entertainment, but the echo of ancestors who danced in chains and died for rhythm. And as long as we remember that, Carnival will never die. Carnival has never stood still. It marches. It evolves. It reinvents. And as we step into a new era shaped by technology, climate anxiety, migration, and cultural reclamation, the next generation is not just preserving Carnival, they're reshaping it. But how do you carry a tradition built on ancestors' memory into a world of algorithms, NFTs, and Instagram reels? Across the Caribbean and its diaspora, young creatives are fusing digital innovation with ancestral reverence. From holographic moss presentations to AI-assisted costume design, Carnival is entering a space where cultural memory meets futuristic expression. In Trinidad, bands like Lost Tribe and Paparazzi are leading the moss renaissance, designing costumes that aren't just beautiful, but that tell stories rooted in mythology, folklore, and decolonization. These aren't just feathers. Their history lessons in motion. Masqueraders now become walking narratives, embodying spirits, warriors, goddesses, and resistance leaders. Meanwhile, steel pan bands are streaming global competitions, and young panists are using MIDI controllers and digital loops to remix classic pan with trap, jazz, and EDM. Calypso and soca, once bound to radio and carnival season, now move across TikTok and streaming platforms, gaining global traction beyond the Caribbean calendar. The diaspora, too, is reimagining Carnival in exile. In Brooklyn, DUI Juvert blocks are being rebuilt by Caribbean American youth eager to preserve tradition their parents never fully explained. In Toronto and London, second and third generation immigrants are turning to social media to reclaim language, music, and mosque that colonial school systems never taught them. Carnival's future is more multilingual, more multidisciplinary, and more inclusive. Queer mosque bands like Queso in Trinidad are reclaiming space within Carnival, challenging norms and expanding what freedom looks like on the road. Neurodivergent and disabled artists are demanding accessible Carnival spaces. Young scholars and documentarians are creating virtual archives, digitizing oral histories and protecting stories from extinction. Even the environmental crisis is sparking change. Sustainability has become a central issue. Eco-conscious bands are now designing costumes from biodegradable materials, recycling glitter, and reducing single-use plastics. Because if the Caribbean is to survive rising seas, Carnival must become climate smart. And through it all, the soul remains. The drums may now echo through Bluetooth speakers. The costumes may come with LED lights and digital tracking chips. The lyrics may be streamed and stitched into memes. But the ancestral spirit remains rooted in rhythm, memory, and resistance. The future of Carnival is not about choosing between past and progress. It's about merging the two, honoring the sacred while embracing the new. Because Carnival has always been a dance between then and now. And as long as there are storytellers, drummers, wirebenders, lyricists, and those who remember that Carnival was born in fire, the road will never end. Carnival is not just a celebration. It is a living ritual, an ancestral archive, and a sacred inheritance passed from hand to hand, heart to heart, across centuries of struggle and joy. It is a bridge between the living and the dead. Beneath every beat of the steel pan lies the heartbeat of the enslaved. In every Carnival chant, you can hear the whisper of a grandmother who once danced barefoot in the mud at dawn, smearing her face in ash, oil, and freedom. In every step on the road, a generation is remembered, not through books but through movement, through music, through mosque. Carnival is a remembrance ceremony disguised as celebration. It's how Caribbean people archive history without needing permission. Long before museums, before world music categories and global tourism, the people were already preserving memory, through costume, through call and response, through the masquerade. The ancestors who were stripped of language, nation, and name, they live on in the mosque. They appear in the jab-jab covered in molasses. In the sailor mosque stumbling with mock drunkenness. In the midnight robber, spitting epic speeches with a voice bigger than the empire. There in the devil's horns, the blue devils of Paramine, the Moko Jumbi towering over oppression on 10-foot stilts. Carnival is a ceremony for them. It is also a gift to the children. Those who learn rhythm before they learn to write, who wrap cloth around their heads without knowing it's an echo of an Ashanti ritual. Who play pan in schoolyards and think it's just a song, not knowing it's a resurrection. Not knowing that when they dance, they are becoming memory in motion. Every feather, every drumbeat, every verse of Calypso, these are cultural heirlooms. Carnival is how the Caribbean says, "We are still here. We remember. We will not forget." And even as time moves forward, through digital revolutions, diasporic transformations, and global festivals, the core truth remains. Performing Arts Carnival is sacred. It is survival stitched into sequins. It is defiance covered in glitter. It is grief made danceable. It is freedom drummed into the air. In a world that constantly erases, silences, and commercializes, Carnival is a declaration. We are more than slaves. More than colonies. More than islands. We are nations built in rhythm. We are warriors in costume. We are the fire that never went out. So when the horns blow and the mosque begins, remember, you're not just watching a parade. You're standing inside a living monument of resistance, joy, and ancestral truth. And long after the stage lights fade and the feathers are gone, the mosque lives on. The mosque never dies.